Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 306. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. It's good, man. The season's flying by. We're in mid-May, and I'm not really sure where time went, to be honest, because we were just so amped for the season to start. And, yeah, it feels like that we're flying by and flying through this 2024 season. MLB season's a month and a half in, which is crazy to think, but the minor league season is not far behind it at this point. So there's a lot to talk about, a lot of interesting kind of ups and downs like we're going to hit on in this episode. And like at this point, it's need to see some stuff out of some of these players that we keep waiting on. And I kind of wonder for a couple of them that we'll talk about off the bat is, will the results ever come?
Yeah, well, that's a fair question. And at this point, we're at the quarter mark of the season. It feels weird to say, but you look at the standings, a lot of teams have played between 39 and 42 games right now. So, yeah, we are right at that quarter of the season mark. It feels weird. Like, it's already Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. It's the day after when you listen to this, but hope all the mothers out there had a great Mother's Day. But, yeah, it's middle of May. It's Mother's Day. It's quarter mark of the season. We're starting to get bigger and bigger sample sizes to, dive into, whether it be at the major league level or in the minor leagues, especially with the, obviously AAA has been going basically as long as MLB has, AA, the rest of the levels not too far behind. Now we got Complex going. All we need now is the DSL, and then we'll have all levels going there, and that's coming up before we know it. That'll be starting too. So, man, time has been flying by, and we have a lot of fun names here. Some are doing well, some not so much. We will get into it all here. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And, of course, you got to go over to rotoballer.com. Check out all the phenomenal content, tools, and more to help you win and succeed this fantasy season. I know we're in the season, but you can still use that code Toolshed. Get your 10% off any premium package. You want to still get some MLB stuff. You're looking ahead to football, which you shouldn't be, but if you are, you got football, basketball, you name it. Rotoballer's got it over at rotoballer.com. Let's start out with a couple of catchers, Chris. One hitting great, the other one not so much. We'll start off with the cold one here with Gabriel Moreno, who, I put out a tweet earlier today on Sunday that Moreno has the same amount of home runs in the postseason and spring training as he does in the regular season in about a quarter of the plate appearances. 8 home runs in 565 plate appearances in the regular season throughout his career so far, and 8 in 140 combined between spring training and the postseason. He had 4 in last year's postseason in Arizona's run to the World Series. Like, he hits the home runs when they don't matter for us, when they don't count for fantasy purposes. And this year he's still in the big old goose egg in that home run department. 112 plate appearances, zero home runs. Slug is 323. Barrel rate remains low. EV is still 89, so he's right around league average EV. Hard hit rate, again, right on league average as well. But launch angles, not great. Ground ball rate, still in that 54-55% range. I mean, every year it feels like, Chris, that we're waiting for that power breakup from Moreno, even just to get to 15 home runs. I don't think we're expecting 25-30. Just get to 15 with a decent average, and you'll be a top 10 catcher. But that hasn't happened. He's still young, 24, but how long are we going to wait around for that power to may or may not come?
Yeah, that's really tough because it looked like that Moreno was adding that power last year down the stretch, and it never, or it hasn't materialized to this point. Now we have bat speed in the equation, which is, it's awesome. I think there's going to be a lot of general broad assumptions made about the bat speed on Savant. It's on the sliders now. You know, Gabriel Moreno's bat speed's not great. Correlates with average EV, as you see, like the average EV is 47th percentile right now. But at the end of the day, here's the problem with Moreno is that he just doesn't hit the ball at ideal launch angles very often. His sweet spot percentage is 27% right now. That's 11th percentile among all hitters, which then leads to a really low barrel rate. His barrel rate's never been high at any point of his career, including last year. It was 4.8% last year, which is bottom of the barrel. Then this year, 3.5%. Bottom of the barrel rate. It's just not good. Moreno makes a lot of contact, but he pounds it onto the ground. 55% ground ball rate last year, 54% this year. It's improvement, but it's not enough improvement to make any kind of difference at all, especially when you don't get to any pull side at all. He doesn't really pull the ball much, and that's where his power is going to have to come from, this kind of power profile. So Moreno is what he is. I'm not going to say that he's going to be this guy for his whole career, but right now, Moreno's high contact. He doesn't strike out often. He puts a lot of balls in play, but sadly, it's a lot of ground balls, and it's a lot of just weakly hit balls too, and they're just not turning into results, which is a little bit of my fear here with Moreno, is that he just doesn't materialize the potential that there is given the hit tool, and there is some power potential, but not big power potential, but you just need Moreno to be a 15 home run bat at the catcher position with the kind of hit tool he has. I'm not sure he does it.
Yeah, I'm starting to really question that. I'm not writing him off yet. I'm not 2 feet out yet, but I'm tempering expectations. Like, maybe that never comes, and maybe he's capped at 10 to 12. That might be what we're looking at here. But yeah, he's lower on the average bat speed that is incorporated to Savant today. So out of the 221 hitters, he ranks 165th in bat speed at 70.1 miles per hour. Number one, and the last place person should be no shock to anybody. Number one by nearly 3 miles an hour is Giancarlo Stanton. Makes sense. And that's at 80.6 miles an hour for Stanton. And last is great contact hitter, but zero power or minimal power, Luis Arraez at 62.3 miles per hour, which is 2 miles an hour lower than second to last Stephen Kwan. So this kind of correlates. You see a lot of guys down here that just don't have power. Look who's like 13th to last, Isak Paredes. Just making that pull power work still. But yeah, more data to dig into. Yay. This will be a fun week of people looking into this and writing articles about it. There's going to be a ton of articles. But yeah, Moreno.
So, I got to point out, Giancarlo Stanton's bat speed is nearly higher than Kevin Biggio's average exit velocity. That's pretty bad. Biggio's average EV is 81.3, and Stanton's bat speed is almost higher than that. So when you said that, I was curious. I'm like, okay, Stanton's bat speed's got to be close to the worst average EV, and sure enough, it's very close. I was hoping somebody was below it, but not quite. Not quite.
Almost, though. That is absolutely freaking hilarious.
Okay, I filtered it by minimum batted balls, 25, and John Birdie is at 78.8. So he does it, yeah.
That is awesome. Give it some time, Biggio. You might get down below there, too. But, yeah, I'm not surprised he's standing number one there. But, yeah, we'll see all the articles coming out this week. They're coming. But another catcher here that's actually red hot right now and played pretty well last year too, just didn't have as much playing time as a lot of the other catchers did, as he missed some time with an injury. But Ryan Jeffers has been maybe a top five fantasy catcher since the start of last year on a per game basis. And last year only had 335 plate appearances, but had 14 home runs, three steals, 276, 369, 490 slash line. This year, 292, 371, 617, with 9 home runs in 140 games. But at the same time, Chris, after being hard hit rate in the 42-44% range, that's dropped to 35%. Barrel rate still consistently around 11.5%. EVs dropped over 5 miles an hour. Kind of, what are you making of that? At the same time, he's also dropped the K rate. So there has been obviously some improvements and also improved in zone contact and overall contact, like 4, 5, 6%. And what are you making of Jeffers? You thinking he's legit and a guy that's no doubt top 10 fantasy catcher right now, or is he more of a sell high for you?
He's interesting. He's actually been pretty good for 2023 and 2024 at this point. Last year, he slugged 14 homers in just 335 plate appearances. So you look, and that's a little over half a season worth. And I don't know. I think that Jeffers is someone that's pretty legit. You look at the average EV is a glaring red flag here. The hard hit rate's not great as well, but he does a lot of things. He's one that actually grades well in bat speed. The barrel rates are really good. The contact skills are fine. Like, you look, and in the zone, it's actually up a sizable portion, 83.3%. Last year was 79.8% in the zone. And his overall contact rate's up tremendously, as you mentioned. 6 percentage point jump there to 77.5%, which is very good. We'll take that all day, especially when you get to the kind of power that he does. Is Jeffers one of these guys, though, that just, you know, the pulled home run? He's got a really good pull rate at 44%. He lifts the ball consistently. He doesn't put it on the ground often. But I think that there's actually more here. You look, his average EV last year was 90.5 miles an hour, and he's consistently been pretty high. He's been close to that range his entire career. So it seems like that is a little bit of an outlier right now, looking at his average EV. And I do think that kind of bounces back. The upper tier of exit velocities is good, leading to that pretty solid barrel rate. So I do think Jeffers is legit. Yeah, maybe he doesn't slug 617 rest of season. I don't expect that. But if he puts you up a 500 slug rest of season, I think you're going to be pretty happy with the results here. And I think Jeffers is still young, 26. He's had some prospect pedigree in the past. So it's not actually shocking to see that he could be breaking out here. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does rest of season. So I think that there is a good profile here when we're looking at Jeffers. And I think that he has the intangibles you want behind the plate.
Yeah, the catcher position has just been really weird in general this year. The studs are being Studley, Contreras, Adley, Will Smith are all doing really good. Salvi Perez has been Studley as well. Rio Muto, kind of meh, but then Jeffers has been really doing well. Connor Wong, as of earlier today, if you drop the plate appearance threshold to 90, would be leading baseball in batting average. Not just catchers, all of baseball. It's been a really weird season. All the other ones that we thought were going to breakout, like Campuzano, he's been kind of meh. Austin Wells has been terrible, though better underlying. We already talked Gabriel Moreno. Yeah, it's been pretty weird at the catcher spot. But Jeffers, I think he's a top 10 right now. I'm not ready to go top five. I've seen that thrown around. I'm not ready to go that high on Jeffers, but I think top 10 is fair right now moving forward. Next guy here, going back to the where the heck is the power gone that we were talking about with Moreno. Ke'Bryan Hayes, another guy that was hitting for power in spring training, a guy that's always, you know, for the most part, had really good quality of contact metrics. Not so much this season, sitting on one home run in 149 plate appearances, 318 slug, 078 ISO. And it's not the same as past years where, oh, the quality of contact is still really good. That's even gone down this year. EV down nearly 5 miles an hour to 87.5. Hard hit rates down nearly 10% to 38.7. And all that work he did to get the ground ball rate down over the last couple of years, it has shot right back up over 50%. You look at the, take this for what it's worth, with a grain of salt, but the similar batters to him on for batted ball profile on Savant, Cal Mitchell, Randall Grichuk, Machin Cesar Hernandez and Matt Duffy. Not exactly an all-star cast of five there. I've been a defender of Hayes lately, which is weird because I used to be lower than most on him when he was a prospect. I don't know if I can defend him anymore, Chris. Now he's on the IL, still 27, but I mean, I'm like with Moreno, is that power ever going to be there, or is Hayes just going to be one of those guys that's 10 to 15 home runs? His career high is 15. Do you think he ever surpasses that, ever?
I'd like to think so. I think that this is a really good talking point that, yeah, there's always too much made of spring training.
Yep.
Hayes was one of those spring training all-stars, man. He looked really good doing so. It looked like he was going to be lifting the ball more. He had 21 hits and 51 at-bats, slash 412, 434, 647, three home runs. Everything looked good for Hayes. Even the StatCast data in the parks that had StatCast were really good for Ke'Bryan Hayes. And then you look at what he's done this season. Guess what? Right back on the ground again. And sadly, the barrel rate is at a career low, 1.9% right now. He has just two barrels all season, which is not great. Yeah, the X slug is 302. So there's not a lot there. The X slug being lower than his 318 slugs is pretty telling. And the ground ball rate of 52% is quite high. Hayes is just not lifting the ball at all. He's not pulling the ball at all. That's where his power comes from, when he pulls the fly balls. Yet this year it's just a 24% pull rate. MLB averages 37. So that's really bad. I'm certainly worried about Hayes. I think that sadly he might just be who he is, a guy that makes a lot of contact, a guy we thought might run. We saw the stolen bases halved last year, 20 stolen bases in 2022. The new rules had all the stolen bases across the board last year, but he'd stole just 10. And then so far this year, zero in 150 plate appearances and just one home run. Is Hayes going to improve? Is he going to continue this? Yeah, he's going to improve. There's literally no doubt in my mind about that. But I'm not sure that Ke'Bryan Hayes is somebody that I'm just like overly excited about at this point. And he's going to be taking a big dip in my dynasty rankings.
Yeah, I dropped him a good amount this month as well. I still think he can be a decent, like a top, I don't know, 200 guy. But is he ever going to be top 100, top 75? Like, thought he had the upside to do if that power came along. I don't know. I'm not 100% out on that, but 95% out on that. Let's just say that. To the point where I'm not even sure if I would classify him as a buy low right now. I guess at the price is low enough, but I'm losing a little bit of enthusiasm for Hayes. Let's say that. Right. Someone that is mashing though is Brent Rooker, who's coming out of nowhere. He had 30 home runs last year, but made a lot of improvements this year. 9 home runs and 118 plate appearances, slashing 282, 373, 602. Similar to last year, quality of contact is very good across the board. 17.2% barrel rate, 92.4 EV. 48.4% hard hit rate. Still striking out a lot, Chris, but career high walk rate, career high zone contact rate, and improved his overall contact rate about 3.5%. The fact that he's right around a league average zone contact rate right now at 82%. How much are you buying into this? Last year, all right, 30 home runs is fun, but didn't really give you much outside of that. Lower average, always been the case with Rooker, but some of these, you know, improvements are noticeable this year. And how much are you buying into that?
See, he's going to be one of these guys that can make a 32.5% strikeout rate work. Right. Certainly seems like it. His 32.5% this rate is right on his career average, actually. Last year was 32.7. He does make up for it when he does make contact, though. Quality of contact is really good. His expected wOBA on contact is top 1% of the league. So when he is making contact, he's doing a ton of damage. And, you know, it's evident. The results are there. He has 9 home runs, a .282 average. So despite the strikeouts, he's still making the batting average work. The whiff rate's really bad. The chase rate's not good either. The end zone contact is where he makes up for it. And I'm curious if this sticks, because last year he was 73.4% end zone contact. This year it's 82%. And if you wonder, okay, how's he making this work with these kind of whiff rates? He's making contact in zone. The out of zone contact rate is what's dragging the overall contact rate down. 36.3% chase contact, so it swings out of the zone. But then in zone, he's making it work. So I'm curious to see, do pitchers change their approach against him? He's mashing fastballs. He's mashing breaking balls too. How do you exploit him? I don't know. He does have a 50% whiff rate against breaking balls, but he has a 324 average and 6 home runs against him. It's a bizarre profile to look at, to be honest with you, and say like, all right, I think this guy could be real. I don't know. I know that Rooker has power. We saw that last year. Does the average take a free fall? It's a real possibility that we talk about him a month from now, and that 282 average is all of a sudden 252. And that wouldn't be shocking at all to me. But I'd say I'd ride the hot wave if you need power. Yeah, absolutely. Somebody you should roster. And the power is zero question. We saw it last year. All the underlying metrics back it. I think that you have to believe in the power profile. It's just how much of the contact gains actually stick. So we'll see. But I'm really curious how this shakes out. But yeah, for power, Rooker, absolutely somebody to be in on.
Yeah, he's got 39 home runs since the start of last year in 644 play appearances. And if the low end of Rooker is what we saw last year, where he's like, all right, low end is a cheap power bat, that's fine. We still need those. And if the high end is something where the average is ticked up from 246 to even 260, who knows what the RBI and runs are going to be with Oakland. If you get that average up 15, 20 points, get the OBP up, similar amounts. Get if he's 260 and 340 instead of 246 and 329, that's a nice little bump. Yeah, I'm digging a lot of these improvements he made. Higher walk rate, the better zone contact, those are all very encouraging. We'll see if they stick. But I'm not like fully buying it, but I'm buying it. I think there's some improvements that he's made that are pretty encouraging, as I said. But let's go over to your Atlanta Braves now, Chris, because outside of Marcell Ozuna, what the heck is going on down there in Atlanta? They're still leading the division, still hitting well overall as a team, even though you look at their individual players outside of Ozuna. If I had told you that the second highest home run total on this team in the middle of May would be Travis d'Arnaud with 5, you probably would have looked at me like I had 3 heads. And then Orlando Arcia is tied for 3rd with Matt Olson, who, by the way, is slashing 195, 303, 361. Ozzy missed a little bit of time. His slash line's fine. Only 3 home runs and 2 steals, though. Austin Riley, 241, 317, 386. Acuna, 252, 359, 357. On pace for about 40 RBI or so and 12 home runs. And K-Rich going back up with him. Michael Harris started out hot. Big meh since then. Chris, and I don't even know where I'm going with this, but you know, how concerned are you for some of these guys? Is there one of these guys you're more concerned about than the others? Is there one that you're less concerned about than the others? What are your thoughts on a lot of these guys?
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the struggles, yet the Braves have the second best win percentage in baseball.
Right.
So I'm really curious to see if and when they get going, like, what's going to happen? Like, it's going to be a dangerous offense. We've known him to be dangerous. Like, there's no denying that. But I don't talk about Matt Olson. You know, I did write him up as a buy low this week. I do think he's somebody to still invest in. You look at the surface and, 195 average is certainly pretty detrimental when you think about what he's doing to your team. He's not hitting for power. Matt Olson was never going to hit 54 home runs again. I don't think that was something that you should have expected, but I think 40 is a reasonable expectation. You know, he's making way more contact this year, at least in the zone contact rates up 4 percentage points. He's not chasing any more than last year. I look at this profile and I'm like, all right, this is a guy that's had some kind of bad luck, honestly, not to the extent where it should make him hit 195, but the BABIP is pretty low here, and especially over the last 3 weeks, the BABIP has been really bad. He's running a 247 BABIP right now, which is low. Last year was 302, and that was a 302 BABIP with 54 home runs. Olsen's the type of profile that where he hits the ball hard and when he's not hitting a home run, if it's on the line, he's going to get on base. The barrel rate's still at 13%, which is really good. It's 85th percentile among the league. His hard hit rate of 56%, 96th percentile, the average EV of 94, 97th percentile. It's just so weird to look at. He's seeing the ball on the ground less. He's hitting way more line drives. If that's the cost here, like the fly ball rate's down, but a 7 percentage point rise in line drive rate tells me the batting average should be way higher. It's weird just to look at it and see, like, what in the world is going on? I really think that he's going to come around. I think Olsen probably winds up with 35 home runs still. I know we're, like you said, a fourth of the way in, and he's got four, but not going to be shocked to see him go on this absolute heater and end up being a 35 home run guy with a respectable average. Acuna is so interesting, too, to look at. 3 home runs, 14 stolen bases so far. So he's running. You're getting the steals, but where's the power? His bat speed's the best in the game. His barrel rate's still solid. The average EV is 87th percentile. The hard hit rate's 87th percentile. What's going on with Acuna? I think that he's struggling to lift a little bit because his knee's still not 100%. And I think that just affects him. We saw him come back from the original surgery on the ACL and struggle to lift the ball.
Yep.
He's doing that now. He is pulling the ball more, which is good. I like to see that. And ultimately, there's more swing and miss. The whiff rates were tremendously low last year. For his end zone contact rate to fall, 10 percentage points seems like a lot, but this was somebody that had a really good contact rates last year. Still room for improvement. I think Acuna is coming around, though. If you look at his recent games, he has been picking it up some as of recent. He's had a couple of home runs this month in 10 games so far, 38 plate appearances, or I guess 9 games. But we still need to see more out of Acuna. It's really weird to look at this offense and see who's doing what. Albies hasn't been great, albeit he's been injured a little bit too. I'm curious to see if they get hot, when they get hot. I mean, this was a generational offense last year, one of the best of all time on paper, and even like statistical-wise at least, when I say on paper. And so I'm curious if they pick it up again, or was last year a fluke? I have a hard time saying it's a fluke, but right now it's not looking great, but I do think better days are ahead.
Yeah, I think it would have been, it's not fair to expect a repeat of last year. And like you said, it was one of the best seasons we've seen from a team offensively in quite some time. And it's funny, even this year, we talk about how much they're struggling. The Braves are still 13th in runs scored and 6th overall in team WRC Plus and team WOBA. So if that's struggling, then that's still pretty solid right there. And as you mentioned, one of the top two teams in win percentage this year. But you look at the only one that has a lower BABIP is Olsen. Everyone else is right around 300 or above. Olsen's down at 247. The one guy that you just look at the profile and really scratch your head as to why the surface stats have been as bad as they are, I think, is Austin Riley, though. Because you look at the metrics this year compared to last year, everything's pretty damn close, or maybe slightly lower in some, but slightly better in others. Quality of contact has gone down ever so slightly, but still very good overall. Ground ball rate is literally the exact same as last year, so it's not like a more ground ball issue thing. Zone contact is basically the exact same. Overall contact down 1%, but also improved 2.7% in chase rate. Like across the board, it's pretty close for Austin Riley. He's really struggling against off speed. He's only hitting 0.67 against off speed, 2.56 against fastballs, 2.75 against breakers. Does have a whiff rate above 40% against both breakers and off speed. So there are some issues here that need to be addressed. But yeah, I do think Olsen and Riley are the two that I'm like, all right, these guys are really going to get it going. And I'm not really necessarily worried about Harris or Albies either. But like you mentioned, and I mentioned this previously too, about how Acuna, and maybe we get another 2022 from Acuna, or was it 2021, whatever year that was that you mentioned when he came back from the first injury and was still good, but not like Acuna level good. So I wonder if that's what we're going to get from him, just with more steals. He's still on pace for 50 steals or a little bit more than that. So giving you some value there. But yeah, I do think the two that I think really could take off here are Olsen and Riley.
If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. they're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Moving over to a couple of arms, though, with Bryce Miller and Dylan Cease. We'll start with Dylan Cease here, Chris, who obviously has pitched at an ace level before back in 2022 when he had a 2.20 ERA and 227 strikeouts in 184 innings. Since then, last year was ERA over doubled to 4.58. WHIP was up to 1.42. But maybe just getting away from the White Sox helped, because now in 8 starts since going to San Diego, he's back down to pretty much 2022 levels. 2.19 ERA, 0.75 WHIP, has the best walk rate of his career at 8.6%. And K rate is actually also a career best mark, even higher then 2022, he's at 32.4% right now. Given the state of pitching, Chris, is Dylan Cease back in the ace discussion?
I think he has to be, and it's always going to be a bit of a rocky road with Cease. A lot of inconsistencies year over year, and even during his ace level season, there were still some bumps, I'd say. But so far this year, so good. I mean, he's had one bad outing against the Phillies, 5 earned over 6, 3 walks. That he had a 5-walk game too, but he actually limited the Brewers to just 1 earned run, even though he walked 5. So he didn't allow any, he allowed 2 hits that game. So he kept batters off base otherwise. But when I look at Cease, you know, I think that he certainly looks like somebody that is ready to ascend back up. He's just 28 years old. He's in a spot now, a great pitcher's park, a better team, better org. And I know the White Sox clean house this offseason, especially on the minor league side. I was having some conversations about that the other day. But still, I think this was much needed for Cease. Just a fresh start, a new place. And here's the results. He certainly looks really good. The sweeper that he's throwing some looks solid. You know, he's throwing the slider a lot. The four-seam has been really productive overall. And it's missed bats too, which I think is good for a four-seam when you can miss bats with it. But we're looking at some really productive whiff rates on the slider and the curveball, which are huge. 36% on the curve, 46% on the slider. That'll play. And really, it comes down to each crap, the changeup, which is interesting. He didn't throw it a ton last year, but he hasn't thrown it at all this year. He's on a cutter a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to his location. It's been much better. He's throwing strikes. And the walk rate is fine. 8.6%. We can live there. His ERA is 2.19. Looks great. All the peripherals back it up too. So yeah, I don't look at Cease and say, oh, regression's coming. No, this dude's limiting hard contact. He's missing bats. He's one of the highest whiff rates in baseball. So I'm pretty excited about Dylan Cease in San Diego now and think that, yeah, this might be a guy that I'm very interested in. Got him for a trade earlier this year, and so far, so good. I'm pretty excited about what he's doing so far.
Man, who would have thought that Dylan Cease would be the Padres' most consistent starter this year by a mile, really? Michael King has been really all over the place, and Musgrove has not been Musgrove. Waldron is not that great. Yu Darvish is twilight of his career. So they've needed Dylan Cease to do what he's doing now, and it's been a godsend for that rotation. And I don't have any shares of Cease. People that know me know that I was, you know, not fully buying into him, at least at the levels of him being like a top five pitcher back in 2022. There are a lot of encouraging things here. Zone contact's down about 5.5% right now. Whiff rates, I mean, a lot of good in the profile here. I don't think he's a stick on this level, but you know, I think he can settle back into being like a top 20, top 25 starter, kind of again like that tier three range of arms for sure, and maybe even tier two given the state right now and how many arms are injured. And I'm wondering if this next guy is going to put himself into that same range, the top 25 arm or better, or maybe he already is right now with Bryce Miller with the Seattle Mariners and 8 starts this year, 2.66 ERA, 0.95 whip. Walk rate's gone up a little bit to 8.2%, but the K rate, 27.9%. Everyone, like, I feel like he doesn't get overshadowed because people talk about him, obviously, but probably not as much as he deserves just because all the other good arms in that rotation, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, et cetera, Logan Gilbert. So he's got a 4 at this point. But is he moving into that top 25 starter range? I think he's definitely in that discussion for sure. But what are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, he's been really awesome to watch. This was a spring training pitch mix change success where, oh man, this splitter looks really good. He was featuring it in the winter in some facilities, and there was some TrackMan that had popped on some of the video. And like, ooh, this looks pretty good. And yeah, Miller sacrificed a little bit of the command, or I'll say command, a little bit of the strike throwing, but he has in turn gotten more whiffs, and his 8.2% walk rate is still passable. 28% K rate, much better than the 22% last year. You look, and this four-seam's elite. A four-seam is one of the better four-seam fastballs in all of baseball. It gets whiffs. It's elite ride at 95 miles an hour. The whiff rate on it was good last year. It's even better this year, missing a ton of bats, which is huge. I think that considering that he has that kind of four-seam, he's able to play off of it with a sweeper and a splitter. Man, this is a very intriguing arsenal. He's missing bats with the sweeper, and he's missing bats with the splitter pretty heavily. Using the splitter 18% of the time right now, it's got a 33% whiff rate, which you love to see. Got a lot of strikeouts going to that pitch to get the strikeouts, which is huge. He's limiting home runs right now, which he's going to have to do. I think that's been a struggle in the past because he does allow some hard contact at times. So Miller's going to have to rely on the bat missing ability, and it's been there. So I'm curious to see if this continues to stick, if people adjust to this splitter. I don't know. I really think that this is just a really solid arm. Not sure he ever ascends to ace status, but top 30 arm, certainly the case with Bryce Miller. I think he's an easy top 100 dynasty asset at this point.
Yeah. I don't think it'll ever be SP1 for fantasy, but SP2, SP3, depending on your league depth. I think he's absolutely in that discussion right now. That Seattle rotation is so good. I think this gets him hitting up there finally. But hey, Rodriguez went yard today, and he's starting to step out of it a little bit, it seems like. So maybe they can start getting some offense to go with all that pitching. But let's finish off the show with 3 Up, 3 Down. It's the Monday episode. So another edition of 3 Up, 3 Down. We are going with pitching prospects today and looking at the last 30 days. With hitters, we look at the last 10 days. Pitchers, more so 30, just because he gives you more like 4, 5, 6 starts to work with as opposed to 1 or 2. And the first name on the list here is Yober Diaz with the Arizona Diamondbacks, currently with AA Amarillo, the Sod Poodles. Love that name. You know, after allowing 4 earned in 4 1/3 in his season debut on April 7th, been pitching really well. In all 6 of his starts, he has at least 7 strikeouts and back-to-back starts with double-digit strikeouts. I mean, his best 2 starts of the year have been his last 2. on May 2nd. 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, 11 strikeouts. And on the 8th, 6 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 3 walks, 10 Ks. So over the last 30 days, looking at a 2.70 ERA, 170 batting average against, and 44 strikeouts to 12 walks in 26 and 2/3 innings. I mean, a little bit older. He's 23. He'll be 24 later this year. I mean, it's not terribly old for the level, but are you putting any stock into the hot start to the season for Gilbert Diaz, Chris?
I am. I really like what I've seen out of him. One of the biggest things with Diaz was he going to be able to throw enough strikes, and this year he is throwing more strikes, and it's right now looking at a 64.5% strike rate, 63% is about league average. So throwing strikes is a slightly above average clip, 37.7% CSW, 19.4% swing strike. That's a massive upside profile when you're able to throw strikes, and then at the same time, you're also able to miss bats. I look at Gilbert Diaz. The arsenal is really good here. He's got a big fastball, really solid slider. I just think that he could be something. Somebody that's moved up pretty significantly for me. I'm just hoping that the strike throwing does stick. That'll be the big thing is, will he be able to continue to throw enough strikes? And if he does, then I think I'm going to be pretty in on this profile. It's a lot of fun. I think Stuff Plus models will absolutely love this guy. And I know people can look at the walk rate, 12%, not great. But I mentioned that strike rate is much better than you might expect given the, you know, great. So the strikes are there. I think that Diaz is ready to take that step forward and take off because it's a big fastball slider combo. He's got a solid curve. And with that command taking a step forward, I really think that Gilbert Diaz is just a guy that's taken off and moving up ranks significantly.
Yeah, and the good thing about a guy like Diaz is that even if he can't stick as a starter, could have a pretty solid future as a bullpen arm and maybe one that pitches in high leverage situations given the big fastball and the two good breaking balls. So, you know, a couple of different paths to value here for Gilbert Diaz, but yeah, definitely one to look at. I don't think he's not approaching the top 100 status for me, but definitely a name that's on the rise right now and one that still you can get for a pretty low price tag because I don't think the perceived value has really caught up or even close to it. But another name in the National League West, going over to San Diego here, our first down is Dylan Lesko, who is having, I mean, it doesn't matter if you look at the entire season, last 10 days, last 30, whatever number you break it down as, it's not been a good season for him. And Lesko had a good first, I'm not even sure if his first start was good. He had 4 hitless innings, but 3 walks and 1 strikeout. So I guess it was okay. But the control has been really bad so far this year. He has more walks than innings so far, and ERA currently sits at 9 on the dot through 6 starts, 23 walks, 22 strikeouts, and 19 innings. Only ended up 10 hits, but he's walking everybody. He's also hit 7 batters already, which is a lot in 6 starts and 19 innings. Obviously, Chris, the stuff here with Lesko, it's phenomenal. It's a guy that is being talked about. Everything clicks. Borderline ace potential here with Lesko, or at least like number 2 starter potential on the high end of the spectrum. But man, it's been really rough this year for him throwing strikes. And even last year, after coming back last year, he had 22 walks and 33 innings. So this is not just something that popped up this year. This is going on last year too. But how much of that do you attribute to him just getting back in the groove after, you know, missing some time? And are you changing your long-term outlook on a guy like Dylan Lesko?
I don't think you changed the outlook on him yet. I think that, yeah, there's massive things to be concerned about here with Dylan Lesko. One, that he's throwing strikes at a 51% clip. I mentioned that 63% mark being pretty important. And here Lesko is sitting at 51%. It's not great. He is missing bats. CSW's respectable, but it just doesn't look good right now. Do I think he picks it up? Yeah, I believe so. He's still young, coming off TJ. The stuff is there, but we do need to see some results. It's just been incredibly hard to watch him pitch right now because of, you know, the walk rate, how many batters he's hit. Like, it's rough. And that strike rate is pretty representative of what's going on right now. It's one of the worst strike rates among minor league starters right now. So that tells you anything. It's not great. I think Lesko still has the arsenal. I think that Lesko is someone that I'm willing to take a little more time on and maybe even buy low on because the stuff's so good. The command has always been a question, though. And I think that right now, it's a pretty big question mark staring in the face. Is he going to be able to throw strikes at a high enough clip? Is he even going to be able to command those pitches well enough? I think that's still to be determined.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely is. He took a little bit of a drop in my rankings. I think he had to, but it wasn't as drastic as you'd probably think with given the stats so far, because that upside is still there. I mean, the upside, if you rank on simply upside, he probably has top 10 upside for pitching prospects, or at least in that discussion. And the fact that he's coming off of major surgery, I'm willing to give him a little bit more time. But if this is still happening in July, August, all right, then it's going to be a much more substantial drop off for him. And maybe there's just overall underlying issues here outside of him trying to come back from TJ. But yeah, Lesko, not a great start to the season, but still holding out hope. We'll see how the next few weeks go, next several starts. I think it'll be pretty huge for him. But our next up here, going over to the AL West in the Texas Rangers organization with Winston Santos, who with high A Hickory after pretty poor year on the surface last year, had a 6.29 ERA, has a massive turnaround this year so far, 1.41 ERA in six starts, 32 innings. WHIP is one on the dot, 8.6% walk rate, 35.2% K rate. Chris, you've seen Winston Santos multiple times, I believe, so far this season. What are your thoughts here on Santos? He's off to a pretty damn good start so far this year.
Yeah, he's really interesting. You watch him, and the stuff's there. He could be something. And I've seen this two starts now, both of his last two, actually, last week in Rome, and they were in Greenville this week. Two looks at him. Last night, he was up to 98, sitting 96 pretty consistently. It's a high-riding fastball. He doesn't get whiffs on it. And I really think the issue is that they're having him throw it down, which I hate. When you have a high view fastball, like throwing it down the zone just doesn't work. And he's prone to give up some hard contact on it. I think that right now, that's the biggest thing. You look at the surface numbers, you're like, man, this guy is a stud. And I do think that if he went to double A right now, he'd get hit around. I really believe that he in the Texas League, the ball would fly to give a lot of home runs. I think the slider is a really good pitch. The slider generates most all of his whiffs. It sits in that mid-80s range for the most part. He'll get 86, sometimes 87 on it, but mostly it's 84, 85. But it's a sweepy pitch. Misses bats, generates whiffs and chase, which is good. The changeup, I think, is pretty solid too. He throws the changeup against left-handed batters, and it's a two-pitch mix other than against lefties, and he will throw that changeup. He throws the slider to both righties and lefties, which I think is important to note. I'm just a little afraid about the kind of hard contact that he gives up because it's been some really loud contact the last two starts, and I think you come back to haunt him. I think everybody is going to look at the surface numbers and say, oh, this guy's ready. He needs to go to double A. I don't think he does yet. I think that he is one that they need to figure out this fastball because I think the recipe for success is there given the pitch data on the fastball. It's just got to throw that thing up consistently in the zone and locate it well rather than throwing it down, because when he's missing it down, it's coming up a little bit as sitting middle, and that's where he's getting hurt. But I think Santos is a really fun arm. He's thrown plenty of pitches. He's gone deep into games, which I'd like to see. I think he's gone 6-5 the last two. I thought they were going to bring him out for a 6 last night, but they didn't. So, yeah, I think Santos is a really fun arm to be excited about. I think that the surface numbers suggest that he's like a superstar. Pumping the brakes a little bit on that until I see the fastball command improve. But, yeah, he's certainly somebody that you can dream on. I think he should be rostered pretty much universally. If you have 150 prospects in your league, I'd roster him because the upside's there for even more. And I think that, you know, Winston Santos looks the part.
Now, obviously the stuff is there, as you mentioned, Chris, but does the recent, you know, massive drop-offs for guys like Cole Winn and Owen White. Does that give you any pause about Texas and their kind of pitching development in general?
Not in particular. I think that Cole Wynn just never had the command to be good. And Owen White's been so hurt. I think that, you know, somebody asked me about White today, and I think that, do you like Owen White? I like a very healthy Owen White, but Owen White's right. Not healthy all that often. I think that's been his downfall. And you look on the surface, oh man, he pitched 107 innings last year, but he pitched injured the entire year. And that was a big factor in the regression that we saw. And I do think that at the same time, I think that he's still a little banged up right now. And I think that's affecting him. So I don't think I fault Texas for Owen White or Cole Wynn. Jack Leiter's an interesting case. Did they fail to develop Jack Leiter? Way too soon to even consider saying that. Yeah. But I do think that Leiter also, it was a little bit of overhype. It was a little bit of
100% was,
some bad reading at Vanderbilt. And there was bad command at Vanderbilt too, if we're honest. Like, he just walked so many guys at Vanderbilt. We pushed it out of the side because the results were so good. It didn't matter. But I think that Jack Leiter is the reason that you're concerned about a Brody Brecht or even a Hagen Smith this year. Can they throw enough strikes to be relevant MLB arms? And I think that's still to be determined. I think Hagen Smith obviously should and could, like, he's made improvements this year, which is certainly notable, and he's improved throughout the year. But like a Brody Brecht, I'm still a little bit concerned there. I'm not overly concerned about Texas pitching dev right now, just given the nature of kind of the individual cases there. But you would like to see them actually put someone in the majors that has come through their system that's successful. Because, yeah, this is a team that won the World Series last year. Obviously, we're not going to sit here and critique, but they didn't really have a lot of homegrown pitching, at least in that org. I guess Dane Dunning did. No, Dunning was Washington. I don't remember when he got traded there. But, yeah, I'd actually not sure. Cody Bradford's one of the only homegrown arms per se in that rotation right now, which is crazy. John Gray, no. Heaney, no. Urena, who's in the rotation right now, no. Michael Lorenzen, no. Obviously, their IL is completely chock full. Bradford, DeGrom, Dunning, Eovaldi, Molly, Scherzer. None of those guys were homegrown talents other than Bradford, and it's been a short sample with him. So, yeah, it's interesting to look at and say, not a lot of homegrown pitching here.
That's exactly where my brain went. So I was looking at their depth chart, and yeah, I think the only two that have made starts for Texas this year that they developed were Bradford before he went on the IL, and then Jack Leiter recently. So, I mean, Cole Wynn and Owen White are both pitching on the bullpen now. Who knows if they ever go back to their rotation. They also have Jacob Latz in the bullpen that they developed. He's a fifth rounder about 7 years ago. But yeah, that's really it. They've done obviously well on the hitting side, or always better. We'll see with some of these younger guys. But yeah, that's just where my mind was going. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, Winston Santos, definitely a fun arm. No doubt about that. Next one here, Mick Abel, the next down. And it sucks to have Mick Abel as a down and see where he's at in his career, because I'm pretty sure he's like the first pitcher that at least I ever talked about positively ever on this podcast, because I think our second episode way back in October of 2020, or maybe it was early November at that point, was the FYPD pitcher recap from that year. And I remember we were both kind of gushing about Mick Abel, even though we were calling him Mick Abel at that point in time before we got corrected to Abel. But he just hasn't ever, he's been the same. Like, the command and control was an issue when he debuted in 2021. You know, with low A Clearwater, and it's still an issue. Walk rates have not gotten better. And this year, he's at a 5.60 ERA in six outings for AAA Lehigh Valley. And in 27 and a third innings, he has walked 13.6% of batters, which is right around his career level. So I'm like, does he ever make those adjustments? This is now his fourth year in the minor leagues. He made a decent little drop down his second year, down to 10.6%, but then it's just gone right back up to that 13-14% range the last 3 years. And I've seen Abel live, I want to say, three times, and it was literally, it was like Groundhog Day. Like, Giant Keys of Deja Vu, where it's, I saw the same start three times. It felt like, all right, he's flashing great stuff. He's missing bats, but he had like four walks in five innings, and it's just like, couldn't locate his pitches consistently and got hit around because of it. At this point, Chris, I'm not like fully out on Mick Abel, but I am very much questioning, can he be an impact starter at the major league level? But where are you at on him right now?
He is really hard. I don't know. I don't want to be out on him, but I am majorly concerned. The talent's there. The talent is in the arm, but I really fear that this just might be someone that's a bullpen arm. And I don't want to sit here and completely write him off, but the results right now just don't look great at all. And he's not throwing enough strikes. He's walking too many guys. Honestly, like, he's not getting the whiffs you want to see. Like, I'd expect a little more out of Abel, and we're not getting that. So it's a tough spot, I think, right now, where he should be ready, I feel like, to take this jump, but yet we haven't seen it. And that's a concerning aspect to me, is like, all right, he has done really, I would say he's regressed, and you want to see him be able to consistently do, like you said, he's shown in the past, like, oh man, he'll look really good for five innings and then completely fall off. But he's not missing bats. He's not throwing strikes. He's really not fooling anybody right now, which leads me to be a little bit concerned about Mick Abel. And yeah, he's certainly a big faller for me. And I think that you have to right now seriously consider, can he be a starting pitcher? And I think that book is still out on him.
Yeah, that's a major question right now, and one I'm pretty split on. Even like last year, if you had asked me, I think I probably would have said like 70-30 leaning towards starter. Now it's 50-50 and maybe even more like 40-60 or 60-40 towards the bullpen. If I had to bet $100, I'd probably throw it on him being a bullpen arm, which stinks that the stuff is so good. When I saw him initially, I'm like, man, this guy has some young, I wasn't doing a direct comparison, but I was like, some young, like Steven Strasburg vibes. And just hasn't worked out, unfortunately. But the last up here, or going to the, oddly enough, the White Sox organization, with Mason Adams, just turned 24 back in February, but off to a pretty good start for AA Birmingham. In six starts, 33 and a third innings, 2.97 ERA, 0.87 whip, and 42 strikeouts to just four walks. So that's a 3.1% walk rate and a 32.1% K rate, 29% K minus BB rates. He's a little older, Chris, for sure. What are your thoughts here on Mason Adams? Is he a guy that people in Dynasty League should start taking or putting on their radar?
100%. He just turned 24. I think it's a circumstantial thing. He was drafted in 2022, so it's not like, development wise, he's not that far behind considering he's in Double A. He did reach Double A the end of last year. And yeah, honestly, there's talk that he might pitch in the majors this year, which you look at the Triple A arms. They obviously have a lot of guys. I got Drew Thorpe as well in Double A. But, and I've also got the questions of, do we really trust the White Sox? The White Sox entirely cleaned house on the minor league player dev side, and they brought in entire new staff for the player development, especially on the pitching side. The White Sox went from a cookie cutter organization where it was, hey, this guy's got to throw these pitches a certain way. The entire org's going to have to throw certain ways. To now, it's not a cookie cutter approach. They are individualized approaches, and they're letting guys do what works best for them. And I think we're seeing those results from Adams, who's always really had pretty good stuff, but his command has been the big sticking point for him pretty much his entire career. But now the fastball's up a tick. It's still low 90s. It's 91 to 92. It's not a big fastball. But what he's able to do is utilize it how it works best. He's throwing a sinker, and that's what works. Like, a sinker works really well for Mason Adams. And the rest of the arsenal, pretty solid. He throws strikes at a very high clip. It's a 69% strikeout strike rate. It'd be crazy if it was a 69% strikeout rate, but strike rate, which goes right in line with those walks, like you mentioned. He's missing a lot of bats too. A 17.5% swinging strike rate is really good. And the CSW is solid as well. Gets a lot of called strikes. So Adams may be somebody that they continue to push aggressively. I wouldn't be shocked to see him in AAA Charlotte pretty soon. And I think that he could be on that fast track where he's 24. They've seen like what they see out of him. Why not see what they have? I think that Adams is certainly somebody that should be on your radar and somebody that I've gotten like the top 200 prospect range because the bat missing ability is there now. And he's just able to utilize his arm, how he's supposed to utilize it. A lot of orgs do go to cookie cutter approaches, but I think the individualized approach is the way to go. The best arms throw what works best for them. Not everybody can throw a high riding four seam fastball. Not everybody can throw a running sinker. It just pitchers have to do what works for their arm and their style. And I think that at the end of the day, this is what the White Sox are now doing. And it's completely different. Everything's different within their organization. It's going to take time, but it's been really positive so far for Mason Adams.
Yeah, and the other colored Sox team here, the Red Sox, are doing the same thing. That's what they've been doing with Andrew Bailey, and he's been working with guys like Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford, Pivetta. It's all been different approaches, which, given all the data we have, it really surprised me that there are still so many cookie-cutter, oh, everyone does this, everyone should go change-ups here. Why? Every pitcher is so different. Yeah. I don't understand why that's even a thing and why it's such a prevalent thing at that. So, four or five teams are doing it. No, a lot of teams are still doing it. But I think you're starting to see, like you said, both the Red Sox and White Sox have gotten away from that. And you'll probably see more and more teams go away from that as well, which is a good thing for sure. Last down here, we're going to Cole Roby from the St. Louis Cardinals. And really unfortunate because he was a guy with a lot of helium entering the season. And it's way too early to say that helium wasn't justified, because I still think it was. And if you look under the hood, it hasn't been a terrible season all around for him. He's got 30 strikeouts to 9 walks in 20 and 2/3 innings. He's also given up 9 home runs already as well, and gave up 19 back in 2022 and 104 and 2/3 innings. And last year, only 6-58, but had a bit of a issue giving up home runs throughout his minor league career, even dating back to when he was in the Texas Rangers organization. But, you know, are you reading into this, Chris? Is there anything you're worried about with the start so far for Roby? Or is this kind of just a minor speed bump and he's still a guy that should be trending up in rankings throughout the season?
I think Roby will bounce back. I think that health's a big factor for him. Just staying healthy and on the mound is huge. And if I'm not mistaken, he had something in the spring. I do need to look up that and confirm, but I'm almost certain he had some kind of little something. You want to look and confirm that while I'm chatting about him. Overall, yeah. I'd say that.
Trying to pull it up right now, yeah.
Yeah. Overall, he's pitched well. He's throwing strikes, 66% strike rate. Got a 15% swinging strike rate, which will play. That's above average. The results have been so-so. He's really had one bad start, 6 earned over 4 1/3. Walks have been inconsistent. He's striking out some guys. But at the end of the day, I think that Roby is going to bounce back and be fine. If you can utilize this 5.97 ERA and a 6.77 FIP in order to buy him low, I might see what you could get for him. The strikeouts are, I think, will bounce back, 23% K rate. I think that trends upward, and still just a 7% walk rate. I think Roby will be okay. I think health's just a big factor here.
It was a tight back that caused him to miss. He was scratching one start. It wasn't a major thing, obviously, but yeah, a little bit of a back issue back in late February, early March. But yeah, I think that's like the big question. We know the stuff is there with Roby. We saw Roby last year in the AFL. It was a very abbreviated outing. The stuff is really good, and he could be a top 10 pitching prospect here sooner rather than later, but needs to stay healthy. That's number one here. But I think the stuff is still there. So yeah, I'll definitely look to buy low right now on Roby. I'm not like overly concerned yet. I mean, like as I mentioned, the K to walk rate is still pretty solid. You know, he's not walking too many guys in general, which is a good sign. Obviously has the stuff to miss bats. So a lot of stuff you like to see from a guy that's rising up rankings, or should he has. So yeah, definitely still looking to buy Roby right now in Dynasty Leagues for sure. That is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again later this week. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.